Thank you very much for inviting me to speak. And yes, so this is joint work with Matthew Bullimore and Hyun Kim. Some piece of work was published in December of last year, and some of it is still work in progress. Yeah, so I hope I'm going to be able to convey the flavor of what we are doing. So I will start with some motivation. So we're going to be looking at 3D supersymmetric gauge theories on such a configurations, so a line times a Riemann surface. So this is achieved with two twists, which are topological twists that are known as the C and H twist. And of these theories, an important observable that is known is the Witten index, which is usually expressed as the trace over the space of some supersymmetric ground states, depending on the twist, which is graded by a number of things. So the flavor symmetry, so the fermion number, then some flavor symmetries. I'm going to explain or mention what these things are shortly. Of the symmetry that we have, where the G are generators for flavor symmetries. And usually, such as an index is written as an expression, so it's computing via supersymmetric localization. And written as an expression over a sum, over the co-character lattice of G, and it comes with a number of contributions. So minus Q to the M, the K residue of the of one loop contributions. And an SN factor that is there to account for the geometry or basically the topology, the curve we are in. So what I want to stress is that, okay, so this expression is written in terms of some JK residues that tell you which poles to pick in contributions from the one loop. So the one loop contribution will have some poles, and the JK residue tells you which poles do you want to pick. So our motivation, so this is well known, and it's work that was done 2 or 3 years ago. And our motivation was, first of all, is there a geometric interpretation of this Jeffrey Kirwan prescription, like in the original Jeffrey Kirwan flavor? And second of all, how can we access the Hilbert space of supersymmetric ground states and not the index itself?
I'm sorry, what does that say? Interpretation of?
Is there a geometric interpretation of this prescription here? A JK prescription. So the idea was to look at this system here, this 3D system, in terms of basically an effective 1D system, which is a 1D quantum mechanics whose target space are basically moduli spaces of maps to the Higgs branch of the theory. And basically, it's tried to do some 1D quantum mechanics and to study the geometry of these moduli spaces to provide the geometric interpretation of the index and to extract some information about the spaces of supersymmetric ground states. So,
you can completely ignore my question.
Yeah.
Is it easy to explain why the Higgs branch is what comes up
here? I will explain that. Yes. So, right. So in our setup, we I should remind you about a few things about 3D supersymmetric gauge theories. So we took a setup where you had basically S gauge group products of unitary groups, and then we have some hypermultiples, so some matter in a representation of the gauge group, which is like the cotangent bundle of cotangent space to M, where M is a unitary representation. And so we have some symmetries. So first of all, we have R symmetries that rotate the upper hypermultiplets. These are two copies of SU2, SU2H, and SU2C. And of this, we are going to pick a maximal torus. And then we have flavor symmetries that act on the scalars. We have a flavor symmetry, a X branch flavor symmetry that acts on the scalar of the hypermultiplets, and a Coulomb branch flavor symmetry that in the UV acts on the dual photons. I don't have time to tell you what these are. I assume that it's known. But it is important that to these we associate some masses, some real masses. So we will associate some masses which are valued in the algebra of TH, and some real masses that are associated to the Lie algebra of TC. Furthermore, we're going to take one particular combination of this, which is generated by T, this is a convention, but TH minus TC, where TH is a generator of U1H, TC is a generator of U1C. And we're going to look at, we're going to decompose the supermultiplets in n equals to 2 supermultiplets that commute with this. So, and this will become a flavor symmetry of the theory, which I call U1T. U1T is going to be generated by this. And very importantly, we're going to also turn on a mass MT, which is in the Lie algebra of U1T. So once we turn on this mass, we're down to study n equals to 2 supersymmetry, so, or to talk the language of n equals to 2 supersymmetry. So I just write the matter content that is going to come up later. We're going to have n equals to 2 vector multiplet. Where this is the real scalar, this is the gauge connection. We have some gauge genus and an auxiliary field. And then we're going to have some chiral, n equals to 2 chiral multiplets. We are going to have 3 of these. So again, this is the scalar. In the chiral multiplet, we have 2 fermions and an auxiliary field.
So what was the first thing in the V, the sigma?
It's the real scalar sigma. And we're going to have 3 of these. So one that comes from the n equals to 4 vector multiplet, which is in the adjoint representation. One chiral multiplet that will come from n equals to 4 vector multiplet. It's going to be in the representation M. And another one that is going to be in the representation in dual. OK. Then what I have to talk about, since we are going to be interested in studying sort of maps to the X branch, is the X branch itself. So I'm going to say a few things about the X branch. So these theories have some vacua, and two classes of them, of which are very important, the X and the Coulomb branch. And here we're going to focus on the X branch, which is defined by an equation that comes from the real moment map of the acting of the gauge group acting on our representation T star of M, and a complex moment map. So this, considering appropriate representation, is basically x dagger minus y dagger y is zeta, and xy is zero. And so the X branch is determined by these equations. And
zeta was your element in the Lie algebra of the GC, right?
Yes. So GC comes from each U1 factor that you have in G. So it comes with this identification. So yeah. Right. So modulo gauge transformations, and it can be expressed as a hyperKeller quotient. So it's Tm star divided by G in the hyperKeller sense. I'm mentioning this because what is going to be very important for us is that we have a map to the, you can think about zeta as a parameter that resolves the X branch. And we're going to have a map to the unresolved X branch. And we want to require that this is a conical symplectic resolution. Now, this is just to ensure that when we take the inverse image of zero of this map, we get a compact core of the X branch. And we're going to use this later to define what maps to the X branch are, since the X branch is where the accounting of them is, because the X branch is not usually compact.
I'm sorry, why is there a map from MH zeta to MH zero?
Yeah, it's like, yeah, I don't want to enter into this, but it's like that you can think of zeta as a resolution parameter of the X branch, and you can construct a map from the resolved one to the non-resolved one.
Zeta is just some non-zero possible value of the moment map, right?
Yeah.
You're saying that reduction there maps to the reduction at zero?
Yeah.
Is that right?
You can think of it as like the MH zeta doesn't change as you
kind of zeta,
and then you specialize
that
or something like this.
Yeah.
But if you think about Kirwan
nestlings. Yeah. 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 It's just, So, right. So, there is an algebraic description of the X branch, and you can think about it as. It's basically stable objects that satisfy the complex moment map condition. So you impose a stability condition, and you divide by complex gauge transformations. So you forget about the real condition, impose a stability one, and divide by complex transformations. Now, what we require, and I will always assume this, is that MH and also the Coulomb branch of the theory that I'm not going to tell you much about, have isolated fixed points. Under generic flavor symmetry transformations. So in particular, if we look at the action of what I called U1t, this is gonna have as fixed locus the compact core. And if we look at the combination of a maximal torus and U1 of the X branch flavor symmetry, so GH acts isometrically on MH, then we want to have isolated fixed points. It's going to be clear later why we are imposing this condition. Okay. So now let us go back to our setup. So we want to be on a setup that is like R times a Riemann surface, and this system. So as I mentioned before, we can compactify a Riemann surface using two twists, either the using U1H or U1C, and the result is that you get some 1D quantum mechanics that are going to be 2-2 and 0-4. So 2-2 in the H twist and 0-4 in the C twist. Furthermore, when we turn on MT as well, so the mass parameter for U1T, this system is going to be broken into a 0-2 quantum mechanics. So what had been done previously? So previously, the Witten indices were computing using supersymmetric localization. And this means basically the following. So if you have your Lagrangian, then write your Lagrangian as a sum of contributions, like the schematically, like the Young-Mills Lagrangian, the Lagrangians coming from the n equals to 2 matter fields. Then we also have a superpotential and an Fi parameter. But since these pieces are Q-exact, you can tune the parameters in front of them as you like. So in particular, you can send them to zero, and the path integral will localize around configurations that satisfy the minima of the potentials in these contributions. And in this way, people were landing on the classical Coulomb branch, and they were computing the formula I wrote down before. Now, what we want to do is to add another Q-exact piece to the action, which is So these are the two supercharges in that quantum mechanics, which looks like this. And if you do things carefully, this is the real moment map I mentioned before.
Sir, so which twist are you using here?
Yeah, here both. It's independent of the twist.
OK, so Q can be either.
So they both, this one is embedded in both. The 0-2 quantum mechanics is embedded in both. One is 2-2, one is 0-4, but they're embedded in both. And so the equations, if you look at the configurations on the Riemann surface that minimize this equation, what you end up studying is vortex equations on the Riemann surface. So the configuration minimizing the BPS configurations minimizing these potentials, if you take a particular limit, they're going to be given by this. And then there are equations involving sigma and phi and the other equations in the fields in the vector multiplet. So we add this Q exact piece, and we land on a modified set of BPS configurations. And we are down to studying vortex equations on a Riemann surface. Now, I will have to tell you some facts about moduli spaces of vortices on a Riemann surface. So first of all, it decomposes into topological components that are indexed by the degree of the bundle. Right, so tau is an auxiliary parameter. It behaves like zeta, but it's not identical to it. So it's an auxiliary parameter. So it's basically the degree of the bundle. And what we do is we take a particular limit. So in general, solutions to vortex equations are solved by using the Hitchin-Kobayashi correspondence. So you want to basically forget, a bit like as we did for the X branch, forget about this equation, impose a stability condition, and mod out by complexified gauge transformations. And in general, the stability condition is very intricate, and it depends on the value of tau. So, but for our perspective, it is convenient to consider the tau goes to infinity limit. So in this limit, we are going to have first of all, a uniform description for each m of the moduli space of solutions. So physically, you can think about m as the vortex number. And if tau is finite, in principle, there can be only a finite number of vortices on the Riemann surface. But if you take t to infinity, then the description becomes uniform. And furthermore, the effect of this is to basically, so tau does also control the scale of the vortices. So they kind of become point-like in this limit. And intuitively, you can make this rigorous, but you can forget about star of f everywhere on the curve, but at a finite number of points. And so you have this equation generically. And on the conditions that we impose on zeta in order to land on the X branch, this is going to imply that all fields in the vector multiplets are zero. So these are really the only equations we care about. And as we did for the X branch, we want to use an algebraic description of this space. So the Ichin Kobayashi correspondence in this particular limit becomes like this. So solutions are, so the modular space of solutions, which I called MM, the algebraic modular space of solution, is parameterized by holomorphic GC bundles on sigma. Then holomorphic sections X and Y of associated bundles EX and EY. So these depend on the arc charge, so on the twist. But they're, yeah, they're basically E, the bundle associated to E in the M representation tensor K to the R half, where K is a Knoecker bundle on the curve. And same for Y. We have the same, but with E dual K to the R half. Okay, so this is part of the data. And then we impose a stability condition, as I told you before.
Sorry, what is M again, did you say?
Oh, it's the representation where we're taking X to be. So the one of the chiral multiplets to be. So, yes. So these are the 2n equals to 2 chiral multiplets in representation M and M dual. And
M was also the same M whose cotangent bundle was Q or something?
Yes, yes, yes. That's, yeah. The matter is in T star of Q, of M, and yes. Okay, and we mod out by complexified gauge transformations. So in the tau goes to infinity limit, I told you that the stability condition simplifies. And the stability is that X, the section of EX, has generically maximal rank. Okay. And so you can think about this as having sections of X, Y that generically will land in the algebraic description we had of the X branch. But of course, they can fail to do so at a finite number of points on the curve. So for each point of the curve, you have basically something in the X branch. But the stability condition, which will fail to be in the X branch, so it will be in the unstable locus of the X branch, can happen at a finite number of points. And this, by definition, is a quasi-map to MH.
So in answer to my original question, it's essentially this Ichin Kobayashi correspondence that gives rise to the Higgs branch. Right?
Yes. Yes. OK, now we know what our BPS configurations are, and we would like to. Maybe I start from there. We would like to study its tangent bundle or virtual tangent bundle. So I'm gonna be a bit schematic again, but because of lack of time. But let's assume that we fix E, X, and Y that are points that are solutions to our BPS equations. So what I would like to stress is that the massless physical fluctuations around this point will build what is known as the virtual tangent bundle. To the moduli space of quasi maps to the X branch. So in order to explain this statement, I told you that we are going to look at the system from the point of view of the quantum mechanics. And in particular, I want the 0-2 quantum mechanics. And so for each chiral multiplet, we are going to have for each 3D chiral multiplet, we're going to have a 1D chiral multiplet and a 1D Fermi multiplet. Phi, in the notation I wrote before, which are going to be valued in H0 of the associated bundle of the appropriate representation with the appropriate R charge, and H1. And furthermore, we're going to have also contributions from the vector multiplet, which are going to give a 1D vector multiplet, which is basically deformations of the bundle. And we live in H0 of EV, where EV is the bundle in the adjoint representation. And I want the Fermi multiplet, which is going to be valued in H1 of the bundle associated to the adjoint representation. And if you study the Yukawa couplings of this theory, you will find out that the fluctuations that remain massless are going to build two complexes that look like this. So remember that phi was the chiral multiplet in the new equals to 4 vector multiplet. And so yes, I'm not going to write down the Yukawa couplings and not going to go to study them in details, but you can think about this as infinitesimal gauge transformations, and this is basically the derivative of the moment of the complex moment map, roughly speaking. And the Yukawa couplings of the theory are gonna basically deliver this these two complexes. And this is around a point in the moduli space of solutions. You can globalize the statement. So in order to globalize the statement, you you basically consider a universal bundle over the moduli space of solutions and the curve. So the moduli space M will parameterize in particular also holomorphic bundles on the curve. So this holomorphic bundle basically for each point in M gives you the solution on sigma associated to the point X. Okay.
So E V you said was for the adjoint representation?
Yes, yes.
What was E phi again?
So E phi is also in the adjoint representation because it's the Keiler multiplet that that comes from the n equals to 4 vector. So it's also a field in the adjoint representation. So you can globalize this statement by using universal constructions on the curve. So what you do is you have two obvious projections. And if you take at the derived push forward of P in an appropriate representation, again, you're gonna have you're gonna reproduce at a point what you have up there. Okay. So, and this is what in mathematics is known, or better, this is what some mathematicians have constructed over the moduli space of quasi maps. So it's and it's the obstruction theory to the moduli space of quasi maps. So this is a perfect obstruction theory. For the moduli space of quasi maps of a given degree.
Why is it a perfect obstruction? Are we using constant?
Yeah. I don't think I can prove it with what I've told you so far, but it agrees with the obstruction theory that these mathematicians have constructed, and they show that it's perfect. And for people who are not familiar with these notions, essentially, why is this important? Is because it basically allows you. The obstruction theory is something that also allows you to integrate over the moduli space of quasi maps. So, in particular, it gives you a notion of virtual tangent bundle. So, for today,
sorry, just to make sure I understand. Whenever yes. you say quasi map, you mean a triple of bundles and sectors.
Yes.
X1.
Yes. Yes, yes, that's right. And so it's going to give you a notion of a virtual tangent bundle that I mean, for what I'm concerned with today, it's simply you can think about it as the, or you can think about the K-theory class of the virtual tangent bundle as the K-theory class of this obstruction theory. So when we want to integrate over the moduli space of quasi-maps, we're gonna use these physical fluctuations or their classes over the moduli space of solutions to the BPS equations, so the moduli space of quasi-maps. And what I want to mention is that the obstruction theory depends on the twist, so or some properties depend on the twist. So the main property is that in the H twist, the obstruction theory is symmetric. What do I mean by this? Is that if you look at the R charges that you have in the H twist, they're gonna be, you're gonna have a K to the 1/2 here, a K to the 1/2 there, K to the 1/2 here, K to the 1/2 here. So we're basically twisting the quasi-mass by some powers of the canonical bundle. And when you have this symmetrization here, so this K-halves here, you basically have an isomorphism between this and this by certain duality, but with a shift in the fermion number. So in the H-twist, the obstruction theory is symmetric in this sense. And in the C-twist, you are not going to have these K-factors here. In fact, you're going to have one there. And the obstruction theory is not symmetric anymore. And one of the consequences is that the virtual dimension, which is like a count of the dimensions up to sine, so I'm counting the sine, in the H is zero for the H twist, and it's the dimension of the X branch times 1 minus G in the C twist. And this is gonna be, is gonna show up later in an important way. So so are people fine with what it means to be symmetric? Yeah. So, of course, what we want to do eventually is to compute the partition function of this theory. So as I told you before, we want to reproduce the Witten index from this perspective. So, yes. So the fact is that the moduli space to the of quasi-maps to the X branch is certainly not compact, because the X branch itself is not compact. So what we want to do is to look at some particular fixed loci of the flavor symmetries acting on the moduli space. And so if we look at the symmetries we had before, we have this U and T symmetry that, before I told you that on the X branch it was localizing on the compact core, so on the compact subspace. And so if we look at the fixed points under this, what we're going to discover is that the fixed points are, not surprisingly, quasi maps to the compact core L. And if you want to have a concrete picture of what there is behind this, you can think about, for example, SuperQCD. In SuperQCD, the X branch is basically the cotangent bundle to a Grassmannian. Of NC planes in NF, where NF is the number of hypermultiplets you have. And the compact core L is identified with the Grassmannian itself. So, for example, in SuperQCD, you are gonna, if you look at the fixed locus under the UNT symmetry, you're gonna consider quasi maps to the Grassmannian.
Sorry, can you describe this directly in terms of the moduli space of triples? What is compact quasi maps to the compact core?
So. Well, I think you just need to think that TEM, which is a representation, is just divided. It splits in a Lagrangian way into two components, and you can just look at maps that land in L. But in particular, now when I write the virtual, I always write. I always mean, well, it's class, so. I don't want to make the notation too heavy, but if we restrict it to the compact core, we're gonna have some we're gonna have the virtual tangent bundle to the compact space plus some normal fluctuations. So we're the virtual tangent bundle splits like we basically split this obstruction theory into various pieces, and some will build the virtual tangent bundle to the compact space, and some we will understand as normal fluctuations.
Yes. The notation is the same.
Sorry. Yes. Let me call it quasi map 12.
No, that's right. That is really the compact part. Yeah, at some point.
It's really the. So like you have the whole virtual tangent bundle.
Right.
And. When you restrict it to... Oh,
you mean it's pulled back to...
Yes.
Of the tangent.
Yes. And secondly, we want to use the other flavor symmetries that we have, in particular the X-branch flavor symmetry. And I told you that before I selected the theories so that the fixed points are isolated. Now, what this implies is that the fixed points are going to be given by I have to explain some things here, but are going to be given by a union over lambda g is the co-character lattice of g. So it basically labels the g on flux of g. And each of these guys is gonna be a product of symmetric products of the curve. So the dimension of the symmetric product depends on the twist. R is 0 for the C twist and 1 for the H twist.
What is this I? You wrote M sub I.
I, okay, yes, let me. I is just a label for the fixed locus. So we are going to have many fixed loci in principle. And they're going to look like this, all are going to look like this. So you can basically think about, like, what you can think about is like the fixed points are basically labeled by one single chiral multiplet that doesn't vanish, whereas all the others vanish. So essentially, you're going to have so sim comes because if you think about the solutions of the vortex equations when you have only one field, there is a map from, I mean, this is literally isomorphic to a symmetric product of the curve. This is because X is a holomorphic section, so it has a finite numbers of zeros, and certainly you have a map from this to the symmetric product of the curve, which are the zeros of X, and you can show that given that you can reconstruct everything. This is an instance of the Ichin Kobayashi correspondence, and so basically, under our conditions on the fixed points, what happens is that literally the fixed points in the moduli space of quasi-maps are going to be products of symmetric products. And so now we would like to evaluate the partition function. So on general grounds of a quantum mechanics, we expect it to be, we expect the partition function to be given by a sum over the degree of the bundle and an integral over the moduli space of solutions, so a moduli space of quasi-maps, of the A-hat genus of the virtual tangent bundle. Now, this doesn't quite make sense because the moduli space is non-compact. But since we have been talking about fixed points, we can define this to be a sum.
Wait, but you're writing it, when you say partition function, you mean the Witten genus?
Yes, yes. The Witten index. So. So we can basically define use localization to define what the index is. This is a symmetric, the hat over the exterior powers means that we are adding a square root of the determinant. It's this is because we're using the A hat genus. This is going to be equal to, we can localize further, so this is basically a definition, because this thing does not make sense. But then we can localize further to the symmetric products of symmetric products. So we are going to have an expression like this. M is still the degree. Over sum over I are the fixed points. Mi a hat of this of the fixed points times all the virtual all the normal fluctuations, the churn character of the normal fluctuations. Right. And up to some very interesting subtleties that depend on the value of tau, etc. You can actually see that when you do this, the fixed points are going to be in one-to-one correspondence with the residues selected by JK. So literally, you can rewrite this in a way that it matches the local supersymmetric localization computations that had been done previously. That's an interesting question. I'm actually trying to explore more generally how the formula that have been given in supersymmetric localization can be interpreted geometrically. And basically, it's like getting the integrand should be fairly easy. It should be like you basically want to localize on the moduli stack of bundles, basically forgetting about all the matter that you have, and then the matter will enter as normal fluctuations to that. And but the hard part is indeed to understand which contour you have to select to do the integration. And I don't have an answer to this question at the moment. But what I can say is that in these examples that we have considered, the residues and the poles and the fixed points were matching. So now I want to make some remarks about what happens when we bring this MT mass parameter that I introduced before that was breaking our supersymmetry from equals n equals to 4 to n equals to 2 when we bring it to 0. So when you restore n equals to 4 supersymmetry, you can add other Q exact pieces to the Lagrangian. So before we just added one because we wanted to land on the moduli space of solutions to the vortex equation. And now we can add more. And this is most powerful in the C twist because what happens is that you gain a condition that tells you that that X not only has maximal rank, but it is also endolomorphic, but it is covariantly constant. And this basically trivializes the bundle. So what you land is basically maps to the X branch itself. So in the C twist, we see that the index basically becomes the Euler character of MH. So it is basically a Rosansky with an invariant. In the H twist, you can show that the winded index basically becomes equal to a sum over b basically the Euler classes of the moduli space here, there is a minus sign, but these are the fixed points, and you have the Euler class of the where of the fixed points, and all of these things are well known because the symmetric product so the intersection theory of the symmetric products of the curve is really well known since the 60s. Can I have 5 minutes more?
Are we gonna stop you?
Okay. So these things are particularly powerful because of mirror symmetry. So let me first make a few remarks about it. So mirror symmetry is an operation on these theories that that exchanges some pieces of data of the theory, in particular a theory which is for a theory that is in the H twist and a theory that is in the C twist, it exchanges the Coulomb branch with the X branch. The Flavor symmetries are exchanged, and of course the parameters, the mass parameters are exchanged, and T, which is the, well, let's call it MT. My mass is going to be sent to minus MT. Sorry for making a bit of a mess. So all these things are exchanged. And if you look at the partition function, this implies a very non-trivial relation for the moduli spaces of quasi-maps. So you have the degree counting parameter, which is exchanged with the parameters weighting the Flavor symmetries. So this for a theory T is basically the index in the C twist for the mirror theory. With the degree counting parameter and the mass parameter and the weight parameters for the Flavor symmetries exchanged. And this is an extremely non-trivial relation, and we checked that it's actually the case in some examples, and it works nicely. And so we call this symplectic duality for quasi-maps. But
you mean you checked using that formula?
Yeah.
Is there something similar to Kunkel studies?
Sorry?
Doesn't a Kunkel study something similar?
I haven't found a statement of Kunkel saying this, but
it's only available in the video of the talk, I think.
Ah, okay. Well, that's a second video of a talk where it's available.
But for what examples?
It's a super QED N, for example. Super QED N in some genera. So this is extremely non-trivial. And I want to stress that here and the tau goes to infinity limit is very important. Because basically tau has a dimension, and so the mirror symmetry limit is basically when tau goes to infinity. Let me just stress this. And furthermore, I wanted to end with some comments about. Finally, I wanted to end with some comments about the Hilbert spaces of supersymmetric ground states of these theories. Because from this perspective, it seems that you can really access them. Because if you in the n equals to four limit. That's because so Hilbert spaces. This is because the structure is pretty clear. On the C twist, you're going to have something like this, so something that looks like a Radomski with any variant. And in the H twist, you're going to have generating functions for classes of the symmetric products, right? Now, in the what happens in the H twist is that your symmetry, supersymmetry, is enhanced to 2-2. Which basically means that you're doing some sort of Deram quantum mechanics. So you have, in the theory, you have both the Del Bar operator and the D operator, geometrically. And furthermore, you have, so these masses are basically, or these Flavour symmetries are basically potentials for this quantum mechanics. That are generated by circle actions. And so you would expect to be able to do some Morse theory with it, and to look at the space of and to look at the spaces of ground states, or reconstruct them based on the spaces of ground states on the fixed locus. Because basically the potentials, the functions that are turned on by the Flavour symmetries, will always be perfect Morse spot functions. So this means that you should never lose information restricting to fixed points concerning the space of supersymmetric ground states. So basically, in the H twist, what you expect to have is like that the spaces of supersymmetric ground states are the Deram cohomologies of products of symmetric products, schematically. Oh. Okay. And so you should be able to see them. And what you can do in the C twist is basically sort of similar here, working with the X branch itself. And you can look at perturbative ground states around the fixed points of the X branch itself. But the number of points, of fixed points, is exactly the same in the H and the C twist. And so you have basically a correlation between these cohomologies here and the perturbative ground states around the fixed points that are, well, basically functions localized around here. And all of these things, basically, these generating functions look like products of 1 over q to the 2, 1 minus g. And if you do the same there, you're going to have some bosonic components and some fermionic components there. And if you put all together, the index should be roughly the same. And I can tell you why I don't expect cancellations in the C twist as well later. The argument is a bit different. But basically, you can match fixed point by fixed point the number of ground states that you have on the two sides. Which I found very remarkable. And you can play with it with some theories, and I've done it, and you see that things match and it works. So the question is whether this information that you can extract about the space of supersymmetric ground states is related to the spaces of conformal blocks that have been introduced for vertex operator algebras in this place. And I think I'll stop here.
Questions?
So in that equality for mirror symmetry, you're saying that, so in some examples you were we show that these two are equal, but one of then there are power series. They're given as power series in different variables.
Yeah.
You produce a power series in both variables, like expanded in both variables, and just show that they're symmetric. Or
there are yes. So in some examples, once you know that you know how to this computation, the SUSY algebra, supersymmetry localization computation is the same, then you can use other tools that you know work there, like it's called the beta equation picture, and I can tell you more about it later if you're interested in it. But so you use what you computed in there, knowing that these things coincide and are the same. And so that's how you get the power series over the degree counting parameter, which is the hard thing. And then you match it with on the two sides.